So, as probably most people are aware, this is the Pawarna day, the last day of the rains retreat for this year. And as is traditional in our communities, we have the chance to let the senior monks take, or let the generally the senior monks who give the talks take a break and hear from the rest of the community. So this once a year occasion is much looked upon with anticipation in some way or another by the people in the community. And so we have a format, got a little bowl here with names to draw randomly for everybody in the community who doesn't normally give talks to come up and maybe share a few reflections that maybe have come up over the past few months, and just suggest approximately around 10 minutes or so for each reflection. Got a number of people here. And the format that we just talked about just would be the normal requesting, bowing three times and requesting from Lungpa permission to speak. And then what we've decided, maybe just to keep things a little bit more moving, is rather than doing a Handamayang and sadhu, sadhu, sadhu after every single person, maybe just hold off on that and we'll do one big one at the very end. Okay? All right, so without further ado, well, the very first one is Ajahn
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. I was just briefly commenting to Tantissero that after the ceremony, he mentioned to me that he thought I had earned my stripes and I was exempt from this, but apparently not. Appreciate being here and. Having gone through another Vasa at Abhayagiri, I've been thinking about. I've also been noticing negative mental states and thinking about how to work with that. And I guess so. Been thinking of sometimes a bit of a hypothetical example can be helpful. And one thing I was thinking of imagining is let's say, imagine you have a newborn baby and you put it in a room and it has sufficient warmth, but let's say it doesn't, that's all, it's just sufficient warmth, but then you were to leave it there. This is just hypothetical. How long would it survive? Not so long, I think. And then if we think of how helpless young and newborn babies are, then helps us bring forth this motions of gratitude. And it's a topic I've been thinking of. Many, not just Buddhists, but many people, probably like Oprah Winfrey and various people and psychologists, etc., encourage this practice of counting one's blessings, reflecting on what we have to be grateful for, and just, for example, keeping a journal at the end of the day and just writing down a few things to be grateful for. And you can, one can write this down or just think about it and just do it mentally. And it is actually one of the things for those who aren't residents, one of the we have about every fortnight, roughly every 2 weeks, we have meetings, and one of the positive things about these meetings is we can, it's an opportunity to express appreciation, which is quite a useful function of them, as it's so easy to just draw on what's negative or find fault. So I've been thinking of this topic of gratitude, and often it can be quite, maybe it can seem heavy, like you should be grateful. In the book, that little book that Tan Kovilo and Tan Suhajo put together, "Thus Should You Train Yourselves," there's a little quote on gratitude. It's something like, "We will be grateful and appreciative, not forgetting that which has been done for us, even if it is of small measure. Thus, bhikkhu, should you train yourselves." So that should, depending on our conditioning, might seem a bit heavy, but yeah, for myself, I find if I it can actually be quite light and enjoyable if I think back and just think about my life, think about, for example, first grade through about fifth grade, as I remember, you'd have one main teacher in my elementary school. And so if I just think of each of those grades and the main teacher and all the stuff he or she had to put up with, and yeah, just a feeling of brightness and lightness. And then just think of my teachers in middle school and high school, and keep going, all the people who helped me out in college. And then I ended up, after college, at the Bhavana Society Forest Monastery and Meditation Center. And yeah, and it's quite a number of people that helped me. Bhante Kemaratana was very warm and encouraging. And Bhante Tandir Panyo. And there was a man, quite inspiring, Jim McDonald. He gave me my first white shirt to start wearing, and encouraged me to start wearing them on, wearing white on the lunar observance days. And remember Bhante Dhirupanyo shaved my, or Tan Dhirupanyo shaved my head for the first time. So just thinking of it, it's quite enjoyable. It's like yeah, just recollecting the quite light. And usually, being blessed to be here, we can think of, yeah, it's, or even, you know, I guess everyone in this room, we have, although it's so easy to go negative and find fault, we have clothing, we have food, we have shelter, and probably, I would guess, you know, we have, you know, medicines, the basic needs of our life met. And usually, if we look back on our day, it's not too hard to think of one or maybe even multiple ways that people have been kind to us, done a nice gesture. And so it's quite a nice, uplifting way to view the world. And over time, I think it can have a quite positive effect. So just offer these brief thoughts for reflection this evening.
Tam Chittapalo.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Bhutang dhammang sanghang namasami. I think by pure coincidence that was actually second last year as well. So for people who don't know me, I am Tan Chittapalo. I ordained as a bhikkhu earlier this fall, or actually the end of summer. Back in August. So still very much getting used to this new role as a bhikkhu, filling out the 227 precepts and just making the minor adjustments. Yeah, for me it's so yeah, it's been quite a journey. I think most people don't find this too easy. There's a lot of ups and downs. I think it's quite rare to find somebody who has whose mind and heart just naturally inclines towards meditation and holding the precepts as well. I think for a lot of people it takes. Takes a lot of patient endurance and just commitment. For me, it was definitely was that case. The Anagarika year was quite difficult. A lot of ups and downs, kind of more just trying to make it through the day. But through all of that and also the novice year, just really trusting myself on a deeper level. You know, when things would get difficult, remembering why that I came here to begin with. And for me, that was to find something that was more meaningful and purposeful in my life. And I know at least kind of maybe around like high school, you know, when I started to experience like dukkha really for the first time full on, just not knowing even like what happiness was or how to get that. So that's kind of how my search started. And I remember just having this kind of aching feeling in my chest and just, kind of a feeling of directionlessness and just not feeling like I was living my life well or fully, just like something was missing, I guess. Yeah, there was just no sense of really meaning, like I wasn't working towards anything that was really fulfilling, that kind of fed my heart on a deeper level. So when I was fortunate enough to find Abhayagiri, And when I, after I started living here and I guess practicing, I don't really know when I started practicing exactly. It's kind of felt like for a long time you just kind of come and you just kind of endure it. And at some point you're called Buddhist and you have a practice. I guess that's, anyway, that's how it felt for me. But yeah, after time, I realized that that feeling that I would have in my heart, that kind of aching feeling of just feeling like I wasn't kind of just meandering, kind of, it just wasn't there. And I think that was, yeah, that was fairly instant too, just being here. Kind of felt like I was, you know, even if like kind of on a day-to-day level, if I wasn't making the most, if I felt like I was being kind of lazy or maybe not using my time as best as I could, just being here. You know, I don't know where else I could be or what else I could be doing that would be as meaningful and fulfilling as, you know, what I'm doing here at Abhayagiri. So just trusting my heart on a deeper level and kind of sticking with that. Yeah, it's been very worthwhile. When I've gone through periods of doubt and, you know, when I was hooked by this or that idea of something that seemed appealing, I wanted to do, or lost my train of thought. Trusting my, I guess, just trusting myself. Okay, I think I know where I was going with that. Yeah, so when these periods of doubt would come up, there'd be, you know, I would maybe go days, weeks, and even months sometimes, kind of feeling like, okay, yeah, probably this isn't going to work out. I'll probably head home, you know, or leave after this point. Maybe this isn't what I want. And a lot of it was dependent on how long I was willing to fuel that certain kind of storyline that would, you know, come up. But, you know, of course, it would always change. Eventually, whatever I was thinking about that was, it seemed so appealing and worthwhile wouldn't seem so appealing, especially after, you know, I would think it through. Because again, my heart, you know, if I really looked at myself honestly, it always just was telling me that this is really what's worthwhile, most beneficial to myself and my family and the world. And every time I made the decision to stay right here and trust myself, it was always the right decision. So I feel really fortunate that, you know, it always I was willing to give it the time and not make a rash decision and just leave to leave kind of with that kind of confusion. And I really can't thank the community enough as well, the Sangha, the monastic community, and then also, you know, guests and the regulars who come and support us, you know, in very various ways. And I know I've definitely leaned a lot on everyone really here. You know, during kind of low times or when I wasn't sure. And I guess that's been a theme for me. Maybe the past week or so, just thinking on taking Sangha as a refuge. I guess that's been one of the more vague refuges for me, kind of figuring out what that even means, taking refuge in the Sangha. But I think part of it is, you know, going to you know, these people we look up to, our ajahns and our spiritual friends, and know, building these relationships, friendships, and if we have doubts or questions, you know, expressing those. And because, yeah, really we're all going through the same thing. Building that sense of camaraderie has been really invaluable. And it's actually one of the most, you know, the friendships I feel like I've built here. I feel like really that's the most, in terms of day-to-day, it's one of the most enjoyable aspects or most rich parts. So I think it's been about 10 minutes. I guess I'll just leave it there and hope there's something in there that was worthwhile.
And I got a good Josh.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sangham namasa. Just currently experiencing the vulnerability right now. It's really interesting that it's like self-consciousness that arises in situations like this. We recently finished our Vinaya classes over this past 3 months during the Vasa. So that's where we study the monastic code and go over the precepts and origin stories and details of each rule. In our last batch of classes, Ajahn Tittipanyo very skillfully brought up this exercise for us to do. It was like a warm-up to drawing pictures of each rule. You know, you'd put down a piece of paper in front of each person's seat and there'd be a specific rule, like Paccidya number 2 and Sakya 5, whatever. And then our job was to draw a picture and in like the very limited amount of time and colored pencils or markers and then it was a bit of like show and tell, you know. It was sort of like a Pictionary game, but monastic code edition. And there's that like moment of truth when like, you know, a little background. I mean, I really don't have skill with drawing. So I was like putting together my lines and squares and rectangles and stick figures, hoping people would make sense of the picture. And there's that moment of truth where you lift up the picture and kind of show it to each and every person, anyway, similar kind of raw, exposed feeling. Of course, the community was very warm and encouraging when they saw the little stick figures. And, oh yeah, that's good. Good job. So it's at least, you know, we're in a safe, supportive environment. I'm just coming off a 2-week retreat, and it's very nice to take a step back from day-to-day life here. because you can get quite active and different roles, responsibilities, and stuff to keep in mind, take care of. So it was nice to just, for a couple of weeks, just drop it, drop the thinking about work and so forth, and so there's a sense of there's, you know, peaceful. It's quiet in the kuti, and felt like, you know, well supported, taken care of, have all the basic requisites as was spoke of earlier, and yeah, really kind of delighting in really, you know, just enjoying the meditation. Of course, that's, you know, there's also, it wasn't all easy, there's definitely challenges. Another feeling of vulnerability, really, is, you know, as when meditating, just watching what comes up. And so, you know, the various thoughts, impressions, memories that come up, and it's kind of like the show and tell, really, except instead of showing it to others, it's like the mind's showing it to itself. And so seeing those moods and memories can be, quite challenging. But it's also a relief. There's also a sense of it's like at least I'm seeing these things, as opposed to neglecting them or just not opening to them. So there's, yeah, that provides a sense of like, oh yeah, this is right, this feels right, even though it's difficult, it's challenging, it's, I feel like I'm on the right track, because I'm like, sense of feeling like there's dealing with things that need to be seen, acknowledged. Like I was thinking, Lungpa earlier during tea time was like talking about Ajahn Chah, talking about saying there's really only two things you need to do in the practice. That's know and let go. I think that knowing part is the only way I can intentionally let go of something. Like if I don't know it, if I don't see it, acknowledge it, then I can't really, I guess you can kind of let go of things willy-nilly, but to consciously let go of something, I think the knowing aspect needs to be there. Anyway, but coming back, I think this is the real test, is I think it was Bhante G that was saying, like, meditation practice, and I'm totally paraphrasing here, so bear with me, but like the meditation practice, it's kind of like in terms of baseball. So the meditation practice would be like being in a batting cage. So like the formal sitting, walking meditation practice is like you're in a controlled environment, you know, maybe it's a machine pitching balls, you know where it's gonna land, you know you can kind of swing repetitively but then the real game, you know, under the lights with two teams and a crowd of people is like daily life. So this will reintegrating back from a two-week retreat. Okay, this is, I think that might be a helpful perception to hold in mind. It's like, okay, this is game time. So all the repetitive swinging in the batting cage, we'll see if I could put it to use, if I could, you know, a real pitcher throwing fastballs and curveballs coming your way. You know, you got a crowd, you know, it can be quite noisy, distracting. Some people are rooting for you, some people aren't. Okay, can I be calm now? So, but fortunately, this baseball game in this arena of Abhayagiri is a really supportive one. It's a really safe arena in which to train, in which to learn, and hopefully grow. So yeah, there's want to express a lot of gratitude, appreciation for everyone involved in helping to run this place and make it be what it is, both monastic and lay people. But in particular, just Lungpa, Ajahn Namro, Ajahn Kunadamo, Debbie, who have been here from, you know, it's Abhayagiri's inception and helped to, they kind of trailblazed and to firmly establish this safe, supportive environment in which we can all participate in and train in. Also, my mom is visiting the monastery for a few days, and it's great being able to for her to come up here, be at the monastery, and also, yeah, express my gratitude and appreciation introducing me into the world, basically, showing me around. I mean, you and Dad were my first teachers. So, yeah. Yeah, thank you. Thank you for being so supportive and encouraging throughout my life, both before I got into Buddhism and throughout. And it's an honor and a privilege to be able to show you this world of Abhayagiri and this wonderful community of kind and sincere Buddhist practitioners. Okay. I think I've said enough. Thank you.
Samanera Dhammawaro.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddham Dhammam Sangham Namasami. Well, I'll start with an appreciation for my grandma. Last conversation we had, she... Matthew, do you know how old I am? Are you 90, Grandma? I'm 91, Matthew. And just thinking about it, you know, I can't remember really too much of the details of the conversation, but, you know, at the end of it, and she's, let's see, her parents immigrated from Poland. So she grew up in New York State. And I never asked her directly, but I would venture to say that if I said I'm at a Buddhist monastery, that wouldn't register at all. That wouldn't mean anything. But by the end of our conversation, you know, she was just so happy. And just really touched me. And at the end of the conversation, just, well, can I send a donation? You know, can I send you a check? I'm like, yeah, Grandma, you can send a check if you want to. So it's, really nice, I think, that it's just so easy to get caught up for myself and just me. You know, what I have to get done, what I need to get taken care of, and, you know, because this is my job, I gotta do it. You know, I'm here to get somewhere, I'm here to get to where I think I need to go. And I think that's something that's been really nice, and something I can appreciate being here is just being receptive to these times. Because I think before, if I'd been talking to my grandma, I'd be like, oh gosh, like, you know, I'd really like to go just meditate right now. And, you know, maybe I can smile and pretend and, you know, we can have a nice conversation. But it's just like, okay, I'm looking at the clock. I'm looking, the phones here have, they'll tell you how long you've been on the phone. And I remember that being here at first, just looking at the phone, that dial so many times. It's like, oh my gosh, it's been 30 minutes. Oh my gosh, do they know how long it's been? Do they know how busy I am? 32 minutes. Oh my gosh. Maybe I can get out of this conference. Oh my gosh. Oh, 33 minutes. Oh. And then 45 minutes, and like, I love you, Mom, but, oh, okay. All right. But, yeah, today I had a 2-hour conversation with my parents, and, you know, at the end of it, I was like, wow, well, was it worth it?
And yeah, it was the practice. You know, and it felt so beautiful just reflecting on all the things that we were able to share with each other, that I even joked with both of them. It's like, would we have been able to have this conversation 10 years ago? And both of them laughed and joked, and they're like, no, absolutely not. And I asked myself the same question, and it's like, yeah, no way. We'd just be doing something else. We wouldn't be talking about our feelings. We wouldn't be, you know, sharing our struggles. We wouldn't be really trying to listen to each other. And I think it's really beautiful just being here again, because just being able to recognize that, yeah, that attentiveness and that care to the moment, you know, that's such a beautiful thing to just be with and to recognize and to be able to share it with other people. I feel like it's really nice to start with something warm and positive, because I feel like after being here for some time, it's become quite obvious in some ways that, yeah, there's some tendencies that I'm bringing to the practice, and, you know, there's that intention to want to do good and really want to, you know, progress in this path. And it's really difficult when you bring a pretty deluded mind to it. And you start to think, well, and I've had this happen so many times where it's like, okay, well, there's the precepts and there's the schedule, but I should do this too. Yeah, definitely. This is definitely the practice. And, you know, I know we're giving up a lot, but I should probably give up more than what we're asked to give up. And, you know, I know I should feel good about what I'm doing, but, you know, you could always be doing more. So you probably shouldn't feel good. And I think a lot of these things have been coming more obvious just because after doing it for such a long time, you just start to get exhausted and saying to yourself, like, why am I dreading going up to my kuti right now? Why does the thought of meditating seem absolutely dreadful? And yeah, just I think that's a really great thing I've seen so many times happen on this path, is this humbling effect to where you really construct this idea of what the path is, and you say, okay, I'm going to go for it. And this is obviously it. You know, I've constructed it. I've confirmed it with myself. And yeah, this is definitely it. And then by the end of it, you're like, that absolutely was not it at all. and you're kind of face down in the mud. You're like, I don't really know if I want to get up right now even. I'm just kind of... I'm good. I'm good right here for now. At least I know this doesn't work. Yeah, so I've been here for about 2 years, but I think having gone through this recently, it almost feels like a new start. I appreciate that aspect of it too, that we can always just start again. And you know, it seems like the struggles and the challenges we go through, you know, help to give us some kind of solid foundation. But, you know, there's something really beautiful about just hearing something simple, ordinary, or just hearing the same teaching again and just feeling like it's impacted you on a very deep level in a different way. And so, yeah, I think for myself, knowing you know, starting to recognize for myself how hard and tight and pressing, you know, I can approach the practice with, just to hear these words from people, I think, that have been sharing tonight and yeah, will continue to share, that it's just, yeah, just being really kind to oneself is actually a really beautiful thing, and just being open and honest about, yeah, we're not all these emotionless, you know, beings that have to just drop beauty, drop, you know, these really positive and beautiful results that can come from, you know, this way of life. I'll leave it there.
Tanrakito.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. I'm going to speak a little bit on something that I find helpful for me lately, in this time and place in my life and in this situation, kind of a form of maranasati, death contemplation, that I've kind of stumbled on while I've been here at the monastery, and have had the opportunity and access to, obituary reading. In particular, I find it helpful, obituaries of maybe what you would call celebrity obituaries, famous people, infamous people, leaders, and you know, artists, musicians, movers and shakers and whatnot. And it's you know, at face value, it's, you know, it's somebody dying, and you know, and we all know we've been, you know, we've been born, and we're going to die, and it's oftentimes seems like it's just an intellectual kind of understanding of this in a way, and it's something that we don't always feel very comfortable looking at. You know, it's something we put a label on, put it on the shelf. It's like, yeah, I'm going to die. But really not, you know, kind of unpacking it and looking at what all that means, all the different feelings and conditions and things that come up around it. And these obituaries that I read, you know, they're... being they're kind of, you know, removed, they're not like reading obituaries from immediate family, so it's easier to have a little bit more equanimity and not have maybe so much of a sense of me tied up into it. But these people that, you know, every day there's, you know, somebody new, you know, has died and have, you know, had an effect in some way on my life. And and these, you know, depending on the individual, what they did, you know, what they were doing, can bring up a lot of different feelings and emotional tones, memories, things that, you know, I've maybe hadn't thought about in quite a few years. And these things come up, and some of them are, you know, maybe bring up pleasant feelings, some of them will bring up aversion. You know, it's kind of a... seems like such a simple thing, these obituaries, just these little neat little bios, summaries of a person's entire life that's written down in a few paragraphs. And you know, there's just a lot of different ways you can go in kind of investigating the heart through these obituaries and these different feelings that come up for me. You know, it could be maybe a musician that I enjoyed listening to when I was young, and maybe I hadn't thought about them in years, and these different feelings come up. These, you know, the music that maybe was kind of like a backdrop of a, you know, kind of a soundtrack of my life at that period of time. And so it ends up being, you know, not just about this person who has passed away, but also what effect, you know, what causes and conditions, what they, you know, being a musician maybe in this case, you know, what effect did that have on my life? And or was I at that time? What was I doing? Was it skillful? Was it not skillful? You know, does regret come up in some way? Is, you know, memories of things I maybe don't want to think about that were happening at that time can come up. And all these things can come up for investigation and kind of just... you know, just learning what makes me tick, and it's and yeah, you can come at it from a lot of different angles. It doesn't have to be, you know, a heavy feeling. It, you know, it can be approached, even, you know, with like the Brahmaviharas, where, you know, somebody's life can be, you know, appreciated, the, you know, good acts, skillful acts, service that these people have, you know, offered the world can be appreciated, you know, compassion, you know, for those who, you know, were left behind, you know, maybe parents of a young person that maybe passed away, and just reflecting on the pain, suffering that those, you know, those kind of tragic deaths of young people that happen. And also, like mudita, just having joy, gladness for good works done. And but at the same time, have, you know, since it's a little bit removed, you know, it's easier to have a little bit, you know, opaque equanimity around this, and not not maybe taking it so personally and being overwhelmed, you know, whereas if it was a family member you were thinking about, it's, yeah, I don't know how long this will continue for me. I have the opportunity here for this to happen, and I find it useful. You know, that may change. It probably will change. For me, just having something more, these obituaries kind of bring a more visceral, kind of a more, you know, meaty kind of a feeling around death, that it just doesn't happen with a, you know, just that intellectual knowing, you know, it, those kind of aha moments is what I tend to find with these obituaries, and yeah, it's something, you know, that you may find useful. I don't know, but it's something that I, just kind of seem to do it every day when I can, just to read them and research them. End up researching people a little bit and learning more about their lives and how they've unfolded, and yeah, it can turn into something more than just, you know, just something that you just read and set down and forget about. I think I'll leave it there. Thank you.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddham dhammam sangham namassami. Ask the Sangha lay people take leave to speak a little on Dhamma, which I think to me, truth is a very important part of that. It's kind of a simple word, but you know, just the truth of what's going on, what's going on right now, as clear as the mind can see it. And there was one of the monastics earlier tonight was talking about how I think it was Anagarika Josh was saying that, you know, in order, Ajahn Chah taught that really we practitioners just need to really do two things, one to know and one to let go. And yeah, it does definitely seems that to let go, the mind needs to know, it needs to see clearly. It doesn't know what's going on, then it's just resorting to habits, basically reacting to impressions, and just going to spin around and around. So, yeah, just know, like, what is the truth right now? And the truth right now, you know, is, like, I think one of the things that, you know, I remember, you know, coming to Dhamma practice as a layperson or coming to the monastery early, and you know, you hear, okay, these are defilements, they're bad, we need to get rid of them. All right, yeah, okay, bad defilements, okay, yeah. What I found for myself is that coming at with that angle of, okay, gotta get rid of this, gotta change me, is it just sets up another kind of another pattern of pushing, of aversion, of greed, of self, and so just to go, okay, right now, what is the mind doing? Really, you know, oh, okay. And what does that feel like? How do I know? You know, how do I, like, you know, right now maybe there's fear, or maybe there's aversion, or maybe there's pining for something, really want something. How do you, you know, how does, oh yeah, it feels like this in this area. Oh, it's changing in this way. Oh, now it's pining for this, you know. Now it doesn't want that. And it's like, oh, you know, so like I found that getting a feel for the texture of aversion, of fear, of dislike, of liking, of gotta have this, it's gotta be this way, gotta, you know, whatever the gotta is, you know. You can feel like the heart tighten, the hands just kind of, you know, gripping, and you're kind of bowling over. And, okay, yeah. And then similarly, like, you know, I remember hearing Lumpur saying, maybe it was a tea time conversation, he was saying something to the effect of, like, you know, it's not like we're, like, it's like some sort of string of, you know, uninterrupted series of, like, craving that just building on, you know, because, you know, we just, like, probably just explode if it was just, like, craving off of craving, you know, like, you know, we just don't recognize, you know, we don't recognize any, the mind doesn't recognize, like, the peace, that there's moments that it's not pining for something. And that's not, you know, really the letting go that the Buddha's talking about, but that's I think kind of pointing at this change, this, you know, and that's, I think, really helpful to see. It's like, oh, wait a minute, like, it's not just like constantly aversive. It's not constantly wanting. And yeah, like yeah, just kind of allow for something different to happen. So yeah, I guess I'm not sure why it just kind of all kind of came out like that, but I want to share my appreciation to everybody for getting a chance to, learn and try to practice this as the best of my abilities. And yeah. I hope that was useful. And if it's, I apologize if it wasn't. Maybe I can just be left alone. I'll leave it at that.
Anagarika breath.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namasami.
I'll echo the sentiments of a few of those who have already spoken tonight, expressing a lot of gratitude and appreciation to the community, both the Sangha as well as the lay supporters, those of you who come on a regular basis, those of you who have come here for the first time. It's just an unspeakable sense of appreciation for everyone's support for one another, everyone's enthusiasm for practice, everyone's willingness and diligence to make this amazing place continue to grow. It's quite a phenomenal thing. Recently, things have been kind of like a nightmare. So I'll not speak too much directly about what's been going on. So as opposed to speaking directly off the cuff, it'll be more of an extemporization, I suppose. Something came to mind near the end of the meditation, a memory that recurs from time to time, that maybe shared with a few people here in the past, that continues to be of great significance to me, and is this beautiful sort of cornerstone that just whenever it arises, I'm able to recall that there was just something about it that it just seems to make so much more sense the more I practice and learn Dhamma. So when I was a kid, I was probably about 5 years old. I went to a birthday party. It was at the small town that I grew up in. It was a place called Showbiz Pizza. It's very much like Chuck E. Cheese. I don't remember many of the particulars at all about this birthday party,
save this one moment where you know, I think all the kids were in the sort of their sort of performance room where all those bizarre animatronic anthropomorphic animals are gyrating in very strange ways and singing very weird songs. And I look over and I see this one girl. I don't think I even really was acquainted with her. And she's upset. She's crying. There's something something's not going right. She's hurt, and I really don't know what's going on in her heart at that moment. But at that moment in my heart, there was just something that told me I could do something for this person. I didn't know what it was, but I just felt this impulse that if I could just make some sort of gesture to this person to let them know that things were okay, that maybe that could be a benefit to them, maybe that could help them, maybe that could aid in the release of this difficulty they were experiencing. And you know, I use all these words to describe this at the time, or you know, now. But at the time, it was like instinct. There was just something in the heart that, like, with no words at all, just pulled me straight to this person. And without even thinking about it, I knew if I just walked over to this person, put my hand on their shoulder, and said, "It's okay." That was the best thing I could do in that moment. And the memory of it, every time it comes to mind, it feels so wonderful. And I have to thank my mom for reminding me of it, because I'd forgotten it completely for many years. She even reminded me that the girl's mother had called her the following day to express her thanks and appreciation to my mom for raising a good kid. So I have to reiterate that woman's thanks tonight, and an infinite amount of gratitude and thanks to my mother for just telling me to be good to other people. And in that moment, like just knowing, without being instructed, just knowing that's what that means, to be good to another person is just to offer goodwill to them. And so, you know, when I first began practicing, I think I was much more interested in just very directly practicing, you know, something very like strict and minimal, like Anapanasati, with that classical sort of really strong focus on like one, like somewhere on the nose or somewhere in the mouth or somewhere in the stomach or somewhere in the chest, this very very like tightly localized kind of practice. And at some point, many years down the road, I suppose I kind of started thinking to myself, I need to do something else. You know, this is, I see some benefit in this, but, you know, something was missing, or I felt I needed to go in a different direction. And perhaps it was a confluence of things going on in life at that time where I decided, well, I need to try out metta. I just needed to give it a try, because up to that point, I probably had a bit of a bad attitude about it. So it was a practice in and of itself, just to say, okay, whether or not I think this is a valid practice, or whether or not I understand it, I'm going to give it a shot and see what happens. And out of that experience, or out of that willingness to open up to a different perspective, a different way of cultivating the heart, you know, things just really blew open. And that's just been everything for me since that time. I And so, you know, sometimes there are people who speak of metta as like something is just sort of this sort of like vain like hope that like everything's just going to be fine and dandy and there's just nothing to it. It's just kind of this vapid well-wishing, just this nebulous sort of thinking. But the more I practice it, the more I realize that has nothing. Perhaps that's an entry point, but there's so much more to it. And the memory of this one experience with this person at the birthday party sort of confirms that for me, is that it's the very literal changing and opening and deepening of the heart. All of the Brahma-viharas have sort of become, that's become my understanding of them to this point. It's so expansive and so deep. And really, I don't know how else to explain it other than it's just... Yeah, it just opens the entire world up. And I just see infinite possibility in that practice. So that's a plug for anybody who's curious about practicing metta or karuna or upekkha or mudita. For anyone who's knocking it, who thinks it's some words to toss around in the mind for an hour. A real heartfelt encouragement to everyone to give it a try and stick with it enough to understand what dimensions of the practice it can open up. Thank you.
Samanera Chandasilo.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi.
Well, I only get the microphone once a year, so even if I'm repeating what others have already said, my first priority is to express my sincerest thanks to everybody within this room and without, ordained and not, who has supported me this last year. I mean, what is there to say? Conditions here are extremely favorable for the work that we're trying to do, and I feel extremely blessed to be here. I guess more than I can accredit any personal growth to a particular technique, I have to attribute it to what some of the Ajahns have talked about, which is just allowing the lifestyle here to slowly do its work on me over time. A life of simplicity and renunciation I've been here not quite a year and a half, but this I think I've already felt significant benefits from living here. One of those would be sort of the way I think of it is sort of indulging in various sense pleasures. Is to me, I kind of liken it to opening up a wound in a way, because then if you, in order for it to heal, it has to scab over, and if you scratch it before it's fully healed, then when you scratch the scab off, it just starts to bleed again. So yeah, what I'm trying to get at is that indulging in any habit before it's been broken basically opens up that old wound, and then the healing process has to restart. So living here and with and not having the opportunity to engage in many old habits has allowed me to, you know, quote unquote, heal from them. Well, just one example would be, you know, listening to music, which I'm sure many wouldn't say is like a bad thing, but I'm just using it as an example of something that I used to not even be able to go a day without doing. And I would have various songs stuck in my head all the time, but after 6 months to a year here, that even that wasn't happening anymore, which I was surprised by. So these sort of... yeah, I think there's a phrase, I don't know where it comes from, but it's like time heals all wounds. And so far I'm finding that to be true here. But I think some of them take a very long time. Yeah, I think I'll just stop there. So I hope that was coherent.
Samanera Jyotimanto.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. One theme that's really come up for me a lot this last year, I think, is the theme of renunciation. So I thought I'd talk about that tonight. I feel like it's a pretty rich topic, and I don't really feel like I can do justice to it in 10 minutes, but I'll do my best. Renunciation is definitely a quality that is core to our path. In terms of the canonical descriptions, it's placed basically right at the beginning, under right intention. It's the very first one in the list, intent based on renunciation. It's a very important, therefore. It's easy to overlook this fact. I remember when I first came to Abhayagiri, when I was freshly in Anagarika, I was having struggles of various kinds, and I remember having some sort of a meeting with Lungpo, and I think he picked up on this, and he said something to the fact to the said something to the effect of, "This is a path of renunciation," and I just thought, "Oh yeah." Yeah.
And that can be a little daunting, that idea of renunciation. It can sound very intimidating. It can provoke some fear, the idea of giving up our attachments, giving up the things that, that we like, that make us feel familiar, or that give us a feeling of comfort and familiarity. But at the same time, I feel like in my own practice I've found it more useful to view renunciation as a kind of freedom. I feel like there's a tendency to think of renunciation in terms of, well, I've got all this defilement, so I have to go against the grain by subjecting myself to a lot of pain and just really, really inflicting a lot of pain on myself. But I feel like renunciation is kind of about the opposite, actually. I feel like it's really more about letting go of pain. There's this method of teaching that the Buddha uses in the suttas called the graduated discourse, where he begins by speaking to his listeners with talk on generosity, moving into talk of virtue, moving into talk on going to heaven, followed by the drawbacks of sensuality, then the rewards of renunciation, followed by the Four Noble Truths. So it's not really an easy practice. It's pretty high up there in the list. It's the theme that primes the mind for awakening. But when held in the right way, I think that it can be quite an accessible tool. It's interesting that I just mentioned that it falls under the category of right intention in the Noble Eightfold Path. The only item that precedes it is right view, which suggests that it needs to be held in the right way. It can't just devolve into an attitude of self-mortification. And what I found is that there are many ways that one can work with it. So, here at the monastery, we have a lot of renunciation practices we can take on. One of our monks who's not here right now, Tonkin Danyo, last winter he took on the practice of wearing only rectangular pieces of cloth during the winter. So no socks, no t-shirts, no thermal trousers, no caps for the head, just, sabong, bathing cloth, jiwan. And, of course, that's a type of renunciation, and that one is renouncing one's attachment to heat, warmth, comfort. Some people take on the practice of skipping breakfast, taking small amounts at the meal, maybe skipping dessert, maybe going with, little sleep. In terms of lay practitioners, we can try things like renouncing Netflix, at least a little bit. Fortunately, I think the bar is pretty low in America. I went to go visit my family not that long ago, and I took a plane to get there. And I remember as I was sitting in my seat, I looked in the pouch on the seat in front of me, and there was a flyer. And all it said in big, bold words was, binge nonstop. I feel like that sums up the American zeitgeist pretty well. So, the bar's low. Everyone in this room should therefore take it as an encouragement to experiment with renunciation. And really get creative with it. I find that it's helpful to view it almost as a kind of adventure, each kind of renunciation practice, rather than viewing it as a burden that I'm taking on to, you know, enhance my practice or something like that. I view it as more of a stepping into the unknown, which is a little intimidating, but at the same time, there's always growth that happens there. And it can be quite fun, actually. So I really advocate this practice of, just trying to strip away the layers of unnecessary baggage. As a lay practitioner, I found it helpful to try keeping the 8 precepts one day out of the week. But regardless of how one decides to work with this parami of renunciation, I feel like it has very profound effects on one's practice. I mentioned earlier that in the graduated discourse, the rewards of renunciation, or what I kind of interpret that as meaning, how I interpret that as meaning, basically the pleasure of renunciation. I view the rewards, of renunciation, they lead one to understand the Four Noble Truths. And the reason that is because as one begins to simplify the mind by paring away the layers of unnecessary baggage, one begins to see just how unnecessary the indulgences in certain mental states are. So, for example, working with the hindrances. If one has a skillful practice of renunciation, then, when one's mind becomes primed to think in terms of, is this really necessary? And so when states of perhaps ill will, sensual desire, sloth and torpor, restlessness, confusion come up, if the mind has been sufficiently primed to think in this way, one can habitually turn to those mental objects and ask oneself, is this really necessary? This indulgence in perhaps ill will, or this indulgence in restlessness or confusion or what have you, is it really necessary to indulge this mood or this thought pattern? And the more one begins to question those habits of mind, the more one realizes that it's not necessary. And then the hindrances can begin to drop away, and one can enter into a deeper state of tranquility, settledness, stillness, quietude, spaciousness. And this can act as the foundation for liberating insight. Well, I don't think there's too much more I need to say on the topic, so I'll just leave people to reflect on these words and just give this encouragement to really question what's actually necessary and, you know, how can I find joy in going with less? So I'll leave it there.
Tandra Gambiro.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. So everyone's probably feeling pretty apathetic at this point and not really caring what anyone says anymore. So I just want to say congratulations for sitting still for 2.5 hours. If I go on perhaps 2 positions later, there might not be anyone here. So we're almost done. You've been cultivating patient endurance, and I have mudita for everyone. And cultivating patient endurance is a good thing. So, that's all.
Pantissero.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami.
I'll tell a quick story. When we were up at the Pacific Hermitage, Ajahn Sayce traveled up with us, and we were all hanging around the table talking one night, and Samaner Jyoti Manto was telling Ajahn Sayce how his sister is a translator in sign language. And Ajahn Sayce often asks, you know, what words are, what they mean. He's learning English and doing an excellent job. And so we explained what sign language was, you know, communicating through the hands and movement. And then Ajahn Sayce and I continued talking. We ended up staying up till like 10:30 or so. And I was telling him how much I appreciated his presence here at the monastery. And I said, you know, you're such a great teacher for me. And he said, oh, don't listen to what I say. And I said, well, it's not just what you say, it's how you act around the monastery. I've seen you in so many different situations. We went on Tudong together. He went to Alabama with me. He's been here in this culture he's not familiar with for over two years, and we've done work projects, and I've never seen him get frustrated. You know, like sometimes you're working with something and it's just not going the way you want, and you're kind of like, oh, come on, you know, just that little bit of, you know what I mean? And I've never seen him do that. And I told him what a powerful teaching that was for me to be in his presence in so many different situations, and for him to just be so even keel. And he said, sign dhamma. Like sign language, but dhamma. Yeah, it was a good line. I'll leave it at that.
Tan Pesalo.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddhang dhammang sanghang namassami. It's not as late as it feels. watching my mind while sitting here for the last couple hours, you know, pretty nervous and thinking, you know, they're going to call my name, they're not going to call my name, you know, going round and round in my head. And then just kind of getting tired and the mind getting quieter, thinking about animatronic puppets gyrating. That was helpful. I kept thinking about that every few minutes. Never thought about that before. And the mind just got quieter and quieter, and I don't know if I really have that much to say, so I'll just speak for a few minutes to honor the occasion and keep it brief, mercifully. I've been on retreat the last 2 weeks, and I think some people find being on retreat pretty challenging, and some people find the day-to-day more challenging, the being engaged and with the schedule and stuff. For myself, these days, I find the day-to-day more challenging than the retreat. Not to say that the retreat wasn't challenging, that was challenging also in its own ways. But if you were to say, okay, Tom Peso, next 2 weeks, what would you like to do? I'd like to be on retreat for another 2 weeks. I don't think that's going to be offered to me. But that would be my choice. It's such a break, mostly from my own reactions, my own feelings, and, you know, getting shaken up, stirred up throughout the day. And Longpo gave a reflection at the Padimokkha this afternoon that sort of spoke to the way I took it, as a balance between the mundane and the supermundane. Or I think the way that I translated that was sort of like solitude and community. And the importance of balance and being able to swim in both waters. And each of us, I think, you know, does a little bit better in one than the other. And we all have to learn how to do both. And it's doable. But it takes, I think it takes time, and I think it takes a lot longer than we think it's going to take. Early on in an earlier monastic iteration, Ajahn Panyavato made an offhand comment one time. Somebody was asking some sort of question, and just speaking about monastic life as a whole, he said, you know, it's not easy. And at the time, it was very early days for me. It was kind of a bummer. It was like, oh, really? That's not very inspiring. But then since then, that reflection has been really, really comforting, because it hasn't been easy. And just remembering that when I'm getting down on myself or when I'm having a hard time, remembering this is difficult, this is not easy. And it wasn't easy for Ajahn Chah, and it wasn't easy for Ajahn Mahabua. And these are the greats. And if it wasn't easy for them, then it's okay that it's also not easy for me. And it puts things in perspective. Some days it was like, you know, why can I not be at peace with the way things are? You know, it's so easy to say that. And it's so hard to actually do that. You know, why can't I just love everybody? why can't I have unconditional love for everybody? And it's doable, but it takes a while. At least that's my experience. I hope your experience is different. I imagine it's probably similar to mine. And that's okay. That's the way it is. And maybe coming to terms with that is a step closer to being at peace with the way things are. Because the way things are is that it takes a little while. But I can say that, at least from my own experience, it does get better. Monastic life, the practice. Seeing small improvements here and there, things that were more difficult in the past are a little bit easier. New challenges always arise. But there were aspects of the retreat the past 2 weeks that were not as bad as they were in past years, or were better than they were. And that was really nice. That was very... consoling, comforting, inspiring, encouraging. To go, okay, you know, Ajahn Mahā Buddha has a teaching about sort of like little bit, just sort of small incremental progress. And if we can get our expectations a bit more in accordance with the way things actually are and the way things actually work, I think the whole process can be a lot more pleasant, or at least a lot less painful. Express my gratitude to everybody and ask forgiveness for everybody and wish everybody well.
Last but not least, Ajahn Kasapo, drive it home, Ajahn.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammā sambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ dhammaṃ saṅghaṃ namassāmi. Yeah, just sit here and watching people coming up and nicely putting sitting cloth, bow, and then bowed and then ask permission and speaking a little bit and then bow again. Just see people do mindfully like this. Give them I feel just watching people doing that is quite nicely. Nice Dhamma talk already. And I wasn't planning, wasn't thinking I will give a talk tonight. But when beginning from Ajahn Tetapanyo, I know I will be up here again. But for me, not much. It's not much I can talk about. So like this is a skill I have to learn to share the Dhamma even I can feel I after all these years of practice, I know I'm improving a little bit and less dukkha. But you want me to tell you how to do? I could not do it. I don't know how to do it. So a lot you have to do for yourself and you know for yourself. And yeah, letting go is good. Patience is good. Helping out people is good. And also, let people helping you also good too. Yeah, so sitting all over 2 hours, I think a lot of people feel enough. I feel it's uncomfortable to sit so long. So I give people a break.
Handamaya no adagataya sadhu karanda damasi.